everybody, and welcome to That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. I am your host, Bill Yankovy, and this week on the show, going to review AEW Double or Nothing, talk about the amazing event that took place this past Sunday, plus going to talk about some wrestling news, and I'm going to give my thoughts on the latest Dark Side of the Ring episode. And let me just say, before I dive any further into this episode, if you had not seen the newest episode of Dark Side of the Ring, if you get uncomfortable easily, then you might want to skip the part of this episode when I talk about it. But of course, got to talk about the big news of the week, and that is WWE has come to terms on the release of six wrestlers. The six individuals that were released were Braun Strowman, Lana, Aleister Black, Ruby Riott, Buddy Murphy, and Santana Garrett. Now, of course, a lot of people were amazed at Braun Strowman getting released, Aleister Black getting released. I think those two were the most surprising of the two. But it feels like, in a way, with some of the six, WWE kind of dropped the ball. Now, with Santana Garrett, I only saw her in NXT. I read the other day that she was going to go to the main roster, and she... My mic just dropped. she was going to go to the main roster, but something didn't, you know, something happened along the way, and, well, that's that. Now, Buddy Murphy is an interesting case because he had been, up until about the end of last year, had been in that high-profile story, or at least, in, you know, for Buddy Murphy's sake, high-profile story, with the Mysterios and Rey's daughter, which ended up going nowhere. Ruby Riott, you know, she was in the, you know, she and Liv were a tag team, and now the tag team is no more. Ruby is gone. Lana, she was in a tag team, and she was on Raw this week, and now she's gone. Braun, I'm going to save Aleister Black for last, but with Braun, here's a guy who, not even a month ago, heck, not even 3 weeks ago, was in a high-profile match at a pay-per-view. He was in a WWE Championship match. And I'll get to in a minute the reason why these cuts were made, or at least what we've heard. But Aleister Black may be the one that is the most surprising because, and again, the key words are might be. With Aleister Black, he had just started these vignettes to do like a new updated version of Aleister Black and looked like he was going to go into a feud with Big E. And now that's all gone. So, according to reports, the reason the six were released was because they had to make financial cuts. All right, so here's the thing. With Aleister Black, they blew a tremendous opportunity with this guy. He should have been a huge star. I mean, when you have Paul Heyman and Bruce Pritchard backing you up on Raw when Paul Heyman had the book, he was going to go places. He really was. He had, you know, legit the total package. And then with Braun, I'm going to say this, and I don't want it to sound, you know, like it's controversial or what I'm, you know, But I'm going to make a legit argument for Braun here. He might have been the most misused big man in the history of professional wrestling. And that's saying something. Because here is a guy who is close to 7 feet tall, is close to 400 pounds, but he's muscle. He's muscle. And he had an interesting character that was being built up. And you start him off with the Wyatts, which makes total sense, because you got to start him somewhere. And then 2016 is when they do the draft, and Braun is drafted to Raw. So he goes on his own. And it's like, okay, well, what do you do with him? And it takes a little while. He's not a big hit right away, you know, individually. But it does take him a while. And then eventually, once he finds his feet, once he finds the momentum, he becomes this attraction. And, you know, the monster among men. What a line that is. You know, what a catchphrase. The monster among men. And this guy, you know, competed in strongman competitions. Was in a bunch of main events. And it seemed for a while he was protected as far as, you know, booking goes. And then last year, with COVID, he ends up last minute put into the Universal Championship match at WrestleMania against Goldberg, wins the Universal title, and has a run all the way to SummerSlam. But the thing with Braun, and it's, I think this is what it will be remembered for, is there was a lot of inconsistency booking Braun. Because it was like, you have this run for, say, 6-8 weeks, then you stop for two, then you give them like 2 or 3 weeks, then it's another stop, and you go back and forth and back and forth. And it's just like, what's even the point, you know, of using him? What's the point? So, and believe me, I feel bad for all six, but Braun is a guy that I just am like, he could have been so much better. You know, so much better used. He really could. Just, you know, it is what it is. So where do I think these six are going to go? Well, let's get the obvious one out of the way. I really would not be surprised if Lana ends up at AEW. I really would not be surprised. Ruby Riott. Well, Ruby Riott, oh gosh. Knockouts, you know, at Impact, they've got a really good women's division. She'd be a very fresh face for the Knockouts division. Probably the same with Santana Garrett. Probably Impact would be the top place for both Ruby and Santana. I don't want to bunch, you know, jump on the AEW bandwagon a lot and say, oh, they all have to go to AEW, because I don't think every one of them will go to AEW. I think Riott and Santana probably would be best fit for Impact Wrestling in the Knockouts division, because right now they've got a really good division there, and if you add one or both of them, you're going to make that division a lot stronger. Buddy Murphy, I could see him maybe going to Ring of Honor. He's about the right size, you know, good competitor. He's been improving over the last several years. You know, Ring of Honor, maybe Major League Wrestling, you know, could be a place for Buddy Murphy to go. Probably one of those two places. Aleister Black, like, in my mind, I'm thinking he's going to go to Japan. I'm just thinking he's going to go to Japan. But you never know. Maybe the NWA, maybe Ring of Honor, maybe Impact, MLW, AEW. I really don't know. Maybe Aleister decides to go back and wrestle in Europe, which is a possibility. I really don't know. Maybe he goes to Japan, not necessarily to New Japan. Maybe he goes to All Japan Pro Wrestling. Maybe he goes to Dragon Gate. Maybe he goes to Noah or DDT. Maybe, you know, All Japan. I mean, there's a bunch of possibilities that he could go to. So, but Braun is the big one. Pardon the pun. He is the big fish in the little pond. I read that Billy Corgan wants him in the NWA, which would be a very interesting fit. I could see Braun, in my mind, I could see Braun going to New Japan, and he could be that next great Gaijin giant that everybody fears. And the schedule would just be, the travel schedule would be absolutely perfect for him, because all he'd have to do, just be on the road in Japan, you know, 2-3 weeks. And he doesn't have to be used for every tour. You know, he could take a tour off, you know, come back to the U.S. and then maybe in a couple of months, you know, use him again and then see what happens. But it will be very interesting to see where they go. And the 90-day clause, I believe, is the end of August, early September. So be very interesting to see where all six of those wrestlers do go. Well, we do have some well, let's talk about the news that I talked about at the end of last week's show, which, you know, I know for me, I was like, wonder where this could go. And that is the WWE New Japan talks. And there is a new bit or a new story today reported by The Observer that states that, well, Daniel Bryan, you know, he was a big name that was mentioned, but he has not been part of the recent talks of a possible New Japan WWE partnership if they go that way. If New Japan and WWE have a working agreement, the thing is, WWE wants to be the only place for New Japan to work with. They don't want them to work with anybody else in the United States but WWE. So we'll wait and see how that goes. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I really, really don't. Tour news. NXT is going to resume touring this July. They will be touring in Florida. So they're going to be in what is considered in Florida the Coconut Loop. It is small venues in central and northern Florida that seat up to about 400 people. So they're going to be going to Daytona Beach, Sebring, Cocoa, Sanford, Lakeland, and Largo. And obviously the main show will still be taped at Performance Center, Capital Wrestling Center, whatever they called themselves. I really don't know. So NXT is going to be traveling again starting in July. Impact Wrestling has announced that they will be selling tickets for Slammiversary, which will be on July the 17th. It's going to be a limited number of fans, and this will be at Skyway Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. Tickets went on sale today, June the 4th, as a matter of fact. And they sent out a little press release. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Due to the limited number of tickets that will be available, all tickets will be part of Impact's new Super Premium VIP ticket plan. Try saying that five times fast. Every seat is on the arena floor, ringside, and comes with a bundle of perks that have never been offered in wrestling history. Those who purchase tickets will receive a commemorative ticket with lanyard. Yeah, you know, because that's never been offered. Official Slammiversary t-shirt and mounted poster, a post-show commemorative photo ringside or on the entrance ramp with the actual official X Division title. A swatch of the official match-used Slammiversary canvas. Fans will have the chance to see the canvas be cut immediately after the pay-per-view. Impact-branded swag, complimentary water, soft drinks, chips, candy bars, and some Robert Irvine's Fit Crunch protein bars, courtesy of Robert Irvine and Gail Kim. Scott D'Amore, Executive Vice President of Impact Wrestling, said, "We have waited over a year to say these three words. Welcome back, fans. We know Slammiversary will be an amazing event with title defenses, jaw-dropping excitement, breathtaking moves, and now, fans." So, July 17th, Slammiversary will have fans. Probably a couple hundred would be my guess. But we'll have to see where it all goes. Finally, Chris Jericho, as of right now, is no longer under contract with New Japan Pro Wrestling. According to Dave Meltzer in the Observer newsletter, Chris Jericho's deal expired following his clash with Hiroshi Tanahashi at Night 2 of Wrestle Kingdom in January of 2020. However, it is just now being released, or the news is being released, that Jericho is no longer under under New Japan contract. However, he is open to a return. So just because he's no longer under contract does not necessarily mean that he's not going back to New Japan. It really would not surprise me if we do see him at some point back in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But as they say, you never know. All right. So, this past Thursday, was the latest edition of Dark Side of the Ring, and this was about Grizzly Smith and his family. Jake the Snake Roberts, Sam Houston, Rockin' Robin. And I have watched every episode of Dark Side of the Ring up to this point. This might have been, and I could be wrong with what I'm about to say, this might have been the first time that they put up a disclaimer before the airing of an episode. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh boy, you know, I just be ready for whatever comes. So basically, in short, and this is where it gets a little uncomfortable, so if you want to fast forward, you can, because I'll be talking about the pay-per-view in a moment. Grizzly Smith was a pedophile, basically. He had relations with girls that were underage. Jake the Snake's mother was 13 years old when he was born, and there was one point where Rockin' Robin told a story of how Grizzly brought home, or brought to her house, a 9-year-old girl and asked her if she could make a daiquiri for the kid. And Rockin' Robin, you know, basically put her foot down and is like, "You can leave, but you are not leaving with this kid." And apparently this had been going on in the family for a long time, like even to his own kids, which is absolutely terrible. No one should condone that kind of action whatsoever. And then they talk about the other daughter, Jolynn, who was kidnapped, basically. And the person that confessed to the kidnapping was found guilty, was originally going to serve a 33-year-to-life sentence, but only served 7. and they never found the body. And could Grizzly Smith have been involved in it? We don't know. We will never know. I do not want to start any speculation. But it's like hearing the stories of what those three, Jake, Sam, and Robin, went through. And then also their other brother, who was not a professional wrestler. It's one of those where you just, at the end, you just wanted to give them a hug, you know? You just wanted to give them a hug. And then, you know, they talked about battling their addictions. Obviously, Jake's was the worst, I think. But he overcame that, was able to defeat his addiction. He's been sober for 10 years, which is a wonderful accomplishment. And obviously what Grizzly Smith did to them is something that will scar them for the rest of their lives. But it's one of those things, I know it can be hard to open up to people to something like that, but it's one of those stories that you're glad they did open up, because there's now hope that more people can open up to, you know, sexual abuse of any kind, as a kid or an adult, because we do not need that kind of thing in our society. It should not be tolerated. It should not be accepted. But unfortunately, you know, we never find out until it's too late. And it's just a shame. But it was a good episode if you want to watch, just, you know, to hear the stories. But like I said, there's a lot of stuff there that, if you feel uncomfortable, I probably would not suggest you watch it. That's my advice. I want to, one more thing, and then I'm going to get to the review. And it kind of goes back to the releases from WWE that I talked about earlier. And the potential rumor that Vince is going to sell WWE. I'm just going to say it like it is. Until somebody in WWE says Vince McMahon is selling the company, I'm not going to believe anybody. I am going to choose to not believe anybody. I know that NBC has been brought up as a potential. I've heard Disney, but in all honesty, I'm not going to believe it. I will not believe the story until somebody in WWE says Vince is selling the company. And then if that is said, once it is said, then I'll believe it. But until then, I'm just not going to believe the stories and the rumors of Vince selling the company. I really, right now, don't believe that he would sell it. It would not be a good time to sell the company. Let's just say it like it is. The world right now is not in a position to where if a major company was sold, I don't think the environment is ready. I really don't think so. So. All right. Well, last Sunday was a hell of a pay-per-view. Talking about AEW Double or Nothing 2021. Just an amazing show. Which, really, with the exception of one match, was a terrific show. And I said this in the post review, which was on Patreon. This could be a potential for the show of the year. It really, really could. That's how good of a pay-per-view it was. So, we're going to go through each match. I'm going to give my rating. I'm going to tell you what Dave Meltzer thought. And also CBS Sports. How about that? CBS Sports actually did ratings for this pay-per-view. Unbelievable. So, let's dive into it. This is AEW Double or Nothing 2021. We had a buy-in match, which was for the NWA Women's Championship, Serena Deeb defending against Riho. And this was kind of an interesting match because here Serena Deeb comes off as the heel in the match, which I think is okay because Riho is a very popular wrestler. She's very well liked. And I don't think you can, at any point in time right now, you know, boo Riho. So Deeb was the heel in the match. Just solid wrestling, good back and forth, couple of close near falls. Serena Deeb was able to get the win with a submission move where she basically took Riho's leg and was bending it backwards to the point that Riho, pardon me, had to tap out. And Serena Deeb retains the NWA Women's title. I gave the match, you know what, I'm gonna change my grade on this. I had it a little bit lower. I think I'm going to bump it up just a little bit. I'm going to make it a C. I had it at a C minus. I'm going to change it back, or I'm going to change it to a C. Meltzer gave this 4 stars. Holy crap. For a pre-show match. He gave it 4 stars. CBS Sports rated this as a B+. And just a reminder, Serena Deeb this Sunday will be defending the NWA World Women's Championship against Camille on their iPay-per-view this Sunday afternoon. So now we go to the main pay-per-view, and we start off with Brian Cage against Adam Page. And this was a fantastic beginning match for the pay-per-view. A lot better than the rematch that they had, or a lot better than the previous match that they had. Both these guys went at it. It was solid, back and forth wrestling. There were times where it looked like Cage was going to win, but then there were also times it looked like Page was going to win. It just was a great match that told a very good story. And then we get to the end, where Hook comes out, because Brian Cage had asked Team Taz to stay in the back. I can do this match on my own. So Ricky Starks comes out. Starks throws in the FTW title, and Cage is like, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to win this match on my own. Which ended up being a mistake because Adam Page hit the Buckshot Lariat. 1-2-3, Adam Page wins a fantastic opening match to the pay-per-view. I gave this a B. Meltzer gave it 4.5 stars. CBS Sports gave it a B+. After the match, there was dissension in the ranks of Team Taz. So, we'll see where that goes. And then we have the AEW Tag Team titles as Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston challenging the champions, the Young Bucks. Holy cow, what a match this was. If it was not for another match, in my mind, this was the match of the night. If it had not been for another match, which I will get to later. Right off the bat, they're fighting. Eddie Kingston does a dive through the ropes. And I don't remember the last time I saw Eddie Kingston do a dive, if he ever did a dive. And this is tremendous tag team wrestling. Tells a wonderful story. Because Kingston and Moxley have the control. And then Gallows and Anderson come out to distract them. So Kingston takes Gallows out. All of a sudden, here comes Frankie Kazarian out of nowhere to go after Carl Anderson. Meanwhile, the Young Bucks grab a spray can of cooling spray, and it goes into Moxley's eye. And then they hit Moxley over the head with the can, which busts him wide open. And they could only get a two count. Then the Bucks are in control. Then Moxley's able to make a tag to Kingston. Kingston gets in, and the Bucks then have control again. And it's such good back and forth wrestling. It's like they can't put the guys down. They can't put Moxley and Kingston down. Then at one point, Kingston and Moxley do a doomsday device where Moxley has the pair of Nike Dior shoes, you know, to hit one of the Young Bucks to only get a two count. Then you get to the end of the match. Moxley, who had been busted open, was bleeding a lot earlier. He takes so many knees, BTE triggers, that he just cannot hold on. 1, 2, 3, Young Bucks retain the tag team titles in a fantastic match. But like I said, if it had not been for another match, this would have been the match of the night. I gave this an A-. Meltzer gave it 4¾ stars. CBS Sports gave it an A. So now we go to the Casino Battle Royale. I'm not going to go through all of the participants. I'm not going to go through the order, but I'm going to point out a couple of things. The Joker entry ended up being Leo Rush, and that was a nice little surprise. I was okay with it. I've always respected Leo Rush as a competitor. I've always thought Leo Rush is a very good competitor. He just happens to have a bit of an ego. So it eventually comes down to Christian Cage, who was in the first group of five, Matt Hardy, and Jungle Boy. So the fans are into this because it's like Jungle Boy's got a shot. So Matt Hardy tries to convince Christian, you know, let's get rid of Jungle Boy. Let's get rid of him. Christian eliminates Matt Hardy. So now we're down to Christian Cage and Jungle Boy. And this is such a good back and forth series here, especially with the near eliminations. It's like, oh, Christian's going to go out. Oh, Jungle Boy's going to go out. Christian, Jungle Boy. And at one point, it looked like Christian was going to try for, you know, a suplex on the apron, but Jungle Boy manages to get out. But then he runs around the ring post to save himself to land on another side of the ring. Christian gets back in the ring, and then he, you know, sets up, looks like, you know, could have been maybe a pile driver or something, but Jungle Boy lifts him up, gets him over the top and out. Jungle Boy wins the Casino Battle Royale in a big pop, one of the, maybe the biggest pop of the night. Jungle Boy wins the Casino Battle Royale. I gave this a B. Meltzer gave it 3¼ stars. CBS Sports gave it a C. Now, one thing I do want to mention before going along here on the review. During the show, during this pay-per-view, they had initially said that the Jungle Boy Omega match would be happening next Friday night, June the 11th. Tony Khan announced on Busted Open Radio that that match has now been moved back to June the 26th. No reason for the change was announced. You know what? I'm fine with that because it's still going to be a hell of a match between Kenny Omega and Jungle Boy. I don't care if they did it next week, if they did it in 2 weeks, or in 3 weeks. That match is going to be an amazing match. Then we hit the low light of the pay-per-view. This is the lowest part of the pay-per-view. It is Anthony Ogogo against Cody Rhodes. This just did not click with me. This match did not click. It's not Ogogo's fault. I can't really blame anybody. It just, this match just didn't click for me. It really didn't. Cody Rhodes got the win, with a gory bomb. I gave it a C minus. This was my least favorite match of the pay-per-view. Meltzer gave it 2.25 stars. CBS Sports gave it a C. Then we go to the TNT Championship. Lance Archer challenging Miro. Jake Roberts is not at ringside for the match because the day before, Roberts had been hit with a cheap shot by Miro. So Archer kind of goes it alone. Archer does a dive to start the match. And it's basically the two of them fighting. It's really all it is. Not taking anything away from the match. I thought it was a good match. It was a little bit better than I expected the match to be, but it was good. And then we get to the end where Jake Roberts comes out and he has the bag. And the, you know, your thought is, oh, he's got a snake. But Miro stops him, throws the sack. There was no snake in there, folks. So please don't contact AEW if you're thinking that a snake was hurt, because it really wasn't. Miro ends up getting the win when he puts on the game over on the Lance Archer, but does it in a different way. So Miro retains the TNT title. I gave this match a C. Meltzer gave it 3.25 stars. CBS Sports gave it a B. Then we go to the AEW Women's title match. Britt Baker challenging Hikaru Shida. The match has a little bit of a slow start to this match, but it picks up as it goes along, and it becomes a really, really good match. And there is one point, and I can pinpoint this moment exactly, where they had the fans. Because there's a spot where Britt Baker has a waist lock on Shida, and Shida's running to the ropes. Shida ducks, and Rebel, who, thinking with the crutch she's going to hit Shida, hits Baker. And as soon as she does that, there is this sound over the audience like, oh no, Baker's going to lose this match. But she gets out of two. Then we get some tremendous wrestling, back and forth, near falls, submission attempts, can't quite get it. And then eventually Britt Baker puts in the lockjaw onto Shida. She has no choice but to tap out. Britt Baker wins the AEW Women's title. A hell of a match. I really liked this match. And then after the match, Tony Schiavone went over, gave Britt Baker a hug, which was a nice moment. He didn't have to do that, but he did, because he and Britt have become such good friends. I gave the match an A-. Meltzer gave it 3.5. CBS Sports gave it a C+. Then we go to this tag match. Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky against Sting and Darby Allin. Holy cow, Sting can still go at 62 years old. So it is a fight to start the match. Allin is with Page, Sting is with Scorpio. Scorpio Sky and Sting, they go to the entranceway. Sky hits a suplex on the rampway. And, you know, it's like, oh, that's going to take care of Sting. Scorpio Sky is celebrating. Sting pops right up. And, you know, he knocks Sky down. He does a big dive off, you know, the chips on the Page and the Sky. We see Sting get in the ring for a little bit, hitting Stinger splashes, still on the move, doing an amazing job. Then we get another spot, an insane spot. Ethan Page is in the ring with Allin. Page military presses Allin up into the air. And, you know, he could have dumped him anywhere. He does the Bam Bam Bigelow run with Spike Dudley. Paige runs with Allen, throws him over the top. Paige, or Allen, barely makes the barricade, lands on his brothers and a few other people in the front row, which was an amazing spot. Then Allen, you know, he gets pulled out by Sting, and the referees make a count. And Paige is right there waiting. And it's like, if you put him in, I'm going to eat him alive. And Sting is like contemplating. It's like, oh, do I want to put him in? Do I take the loss? Basically is what it was. And Allen eventually dives in before the count, you know, could hit, and they lose the match. So Allen eventually makes a tag to Sting. Sting hits a couple more Stinger splashes. Then he hits a Scorpion Death Drop on the Scorpio Sky. 1, 2, 3. Sting and Darby Allin win the tag match. Very entertaining. It was a very entertaining tag match. Sting and Darby Allin could be a pretty good tag team if we see more matches of them in the near future. I gave this a B. Meltzer gave it 3.5. CBS Sports gave it a B as well. Then we go to the match of the night. Three-way dance for the AEW World title. Pac and Orange Cassidy challenging Kenny Omega. This match has just about everything you could think of. Comedy, action, drama, intensity. It just has everything there. It is so good. It is crammed into one match that lasts almost a half hour. I want to talk about the ending, though, because the ending is so damn good. So, Pac has a pin. He's gonna pin, I want to say it was Orange. He's gonna win the title. Well, here comes the count. 1, 2... The referee gets pulled out. Don Callis pulls the referee out. And there's an argument between the referee and Don. So the referee gets back in. Now, Orange has an... Or no, Pac has another opportunity. He's got a pin. 1, 2... Omega knocks the referee out. It's a triple threat match. It's a three-way match. There's no disqualifications. So the referee is out. Orange is out. Pac is tired at this point. Omega then asks Don to get him a belt. So he grabs the TNA World title. Hits Pac. Then he asks to give him the AAA title. Hits him again. Then he asks for a third belt. Hits Pac again. And he asks for the fourth belt. Hits Pac again. Pac is hit 4 times with titles. It knocks him out of the match. But then, here comes Orange Cassidy. Hits the Orange Punch onto Omega. It knocks him out. Pac is out. Orange can win the match. Here comes Aubrey Edwards running into the ring. She goes for the pin. 1, 2... And as the hand is about to come down, Omega reverses it into a crucifix pin. 1, 2, 3. Omega wins, retains the AEW World title. He barely escapes by the skin of his teeth. A tremendous match, which had an amazing ending. And I want to take back something I said last week. That if Orange Cassidy got pinned in that match, it would ruin, you know, his push. Or at least I thought it would. The way he loses is so damn good. Because Orange had him. Orange had Omega beat. Had him beat. If that referee had been there 1 second earlier, we might have a new champion. Loved the match. I gave this an A+. This is my match of the night. Meltzer gave it 4.5 stars. CBS Sports gave it an A. Now, we go to the main event. We are at the main event. It is Stadium Stampede 2, the Pinnacle and Inner Circle. Stipulation, if the Inner Circle loses, they must disband. So, MJF comes into the football stadium in a limo. He's the only one. Here comes the Inner Circle. They're coming down, you know, off the stadium scoreboard, you know, propelling down, making a grand entrance. Well, they chase MJF into the limo when the other members of the Pinnacle come riding in on the back of a pickup truck. And Tully is in the pickup truck, and he's dressed to fight. He's dressed for a bunkhouse battle royal, kind of. So, everybody breaks off. MJF and Jericho are a group, are a pair. Hager and Wardlow are a pair. Spears and Guevara are a pair. FTR and Santana and Ortiz are a pair. While I'm not going to get to every spot, I'm going to get to a few of them. Jericho and MJF, they end up fighting into the office of the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Urban Meyer, and one of his coordinators, Charlie Strong. Jericho grabs a laptop, hits MJF with the laptop, and Jericho is then given footballs, and he throws 4 footballs right to MJF's face before he dumps him out of the room through a table. And after Jericho leaves, you get this camera shot, and here's Urban Meyer. And all he does is just, holy shit. It's the nicest holy shit I've ever heard. It's not, you know, it's not a big, loud, holy shit. It's just, holy shit. kind of a weird thing, but I found it kind of cool. Hager and Wardlow, they're fighting in the food area. I'm just going to say that because I don't think they really got into the kitchen. They fight into the freezer at one point. Get out of that. Guevara and Spears, they fight around the area that has the chairs. Guevara ends up getting handcuffed at one point, which is like, uh-oh, this could be trouble. So, then we have, you know, the tag teams, they're at, I guess you could say it was like a bar or a party room or whatever, and they have a fight, and they have to take shots, and Conan is there as a DJ, so they're fighting. Tully tries to get a shot, but Conan blocks it. Santana and Ortiz get the upper hand on Blanchard, and then one member, I think it was Santana, that went into the elevator with Dashwood as they go down. So Spears is now walking around and he's looking for anybody when we see the Inner Circle bike gang and they start chasing him around. Jericho and MJF, they're now fighting through the offices of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They go into a meeting room. MJF grabs a hammer at one point, tries to hit the broken arm of Jericho, but Jericho blocks it. He grabs Floyd, hits him, and then staples MJF on the forehead. They continue fighting, and then they eventually make it to Daly's place. And this is where the battle goes, because MJF and Jericho, they're like at the third tier, they're like at the upper deck, and MJF tries to dump Jericho over, but can't do it. Jericho hits MJF with a light and then power bombs him through, I guess, a box or a table would be the best way to put it. So MJF is out. So after Spears runs free of the bike gang, here's Sammy Guevara on the golf cart. And he chases Spears with the golf cart. And they manage to make it to the ring. So it's Spears and Guevara one-on-one in the ring. It's good back and forth action. Spears has a chair set up in the corner, tries to send Guevara into it, but Spears is sent into it by Guevara. Guevara reversed it. Guevara hits a beautiful 630 splash onto Spears. 1-2-3. Inner Circle wins. They stay together as a group, and they celebrate in the ring to end the pay-per-view. Obviously, this match could not be better than last year's, although this is a good match. What I liked about the match is that it was a different feel to it than the first one. The first one was kind of a comedy match, where it was the end of a feud, but it just was, you could do the funny gimmicks here. This one, the second one, it's serious business. It is serious. If one team loses, they have to break up, which is why I liked this match. I gave it an A because I thought it was really well done. I still think the original one, the first one, is the better of the two, but I'm not taking anything away from this one. This is a well-done match. I gave it an A. Meltzer doesn't really do, you know, the taped matches. I don't know why, but it's just him. CBS Sports gave it a B+. And that is it for Double or Nothing. We're going to get to the grades right now. I'm going to say this. I loved the heck out of this pay-per-view. A tremendous pay-per-view, really, from beginning to end. Even with the one bad match, I'm giving this an A. This might be the pay-per-view of the year. This might be the show of the year. That's how good it is. Now, as far as our Facebook group, what was their favorite match of Double or Nothing? Well, we had a tie, and I'm going to break that tie in a minute. The tie is Moxley and Kingston against the Young Bucks in the three-way dance for the AEW World title. There were a couple other matches that did get a vote. I do want to mention them. Brian Cage and Adam Page, Britt Baker and Hikaru Shida, and the Stadium Stampede. I have to go with the three-way match. That match was unbelievable. It was an incredible match. Maybe the best three-way match of the year. And I thought the one at WrestleMania was really good. This one was just fan-freaking-tastic. Incredible. One more note I want to mention, and then I'm going to wrap up the show for this week. During the pay-per-view, it was announced that AEW has a new analyst for their new show, Rampage, and a new coach, and it is the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. What a surprise. I never thought Mark Henry would ever leave WWE. That's probably the same thought everybody had. But yeah, Mark Henry's in AEW. Not only is he going to be a coach, he's also going to be a commentator for the Friday night show. So congrats to Mark Henry. Good luck to Mark. I wish him the best. I really think he's going to do a really good job. Well, that's going to do it for the show for this week, so let's get into the plugs. If you have any questions or comments, send an email, wrestlingman@thatwrestlingshow.com. Follow the show on Twitter @WrestlingShow11, and follow the show on Instagram @ThatWrestlingShow, and check out our Facebook page, our Facebook group page, That Wrestling Show Fan Group. You type that in the search bar and you are right there. Add yourself. Please, add yourself. We'd love to have you. And if you can't find it, it's okay. I put the link in the description of each and every episode. And if you like what you heard here and you want just a little bit more, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/ThatWrestlingShow. There is a new episode of That Wrestling Show After Dark up with myself and Fro. Really good listen. We talk about our favorite stand-up comedians, among other things, and you can get that on the $2 tier. Remember, we only have three tiers. The highest tier is $3 a month. So check it out. Patreon.com/thatwrestlingshow. All right, now to plug our friends and other podcasts that we like. Check out Our Vantage Point, the retro wrestling podcast with Joe Morata and Michael Quinn. This week, they discuss the Montreal Screwjob. Could it have been a work? We'll try to change your mind. Plus, week three of the Royal Rankings, almost at Royal Wedding, but of the Royal Rankings of the best world title changes, and a review of WWF Superstars from June 30th, 1990. Apparently, the individual that suggested that episode, I've heard he's a very nice, kind, handsome man who reviewed that or suggested that episode to them. Plus, and again, they are the only podcast that I will give a plug for their Patreon for. If you sign up right now for their highest tier, which is $5, you can get right now their review of WrestleMania 9. That's right. It is up, ready to listen. I hope you have your togas ready for that review. Check it out on their Patreon page. It is Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Also, check out Greetings from Allentown with Peter Winston. He watches one episode of wrestling in his own unique way. This week, it is part two of his review of the very first Saturday night's main event. That is this week. That is this week on Greetings from Allentown. Also, check out Juice Pro Wrestling, where this week they have a very interesting discussion. Is Hulkamania for life? Andre Corbeil joins them to discuss the impact of Hulk Hogan, his legacy, and much more. This is an episode, if you are a Hulkamaniac, you're going to want to check out this week on Juice Pro Wrestling. Now, if you're looking for non-wrestling podcasts, check out the Best Pick Movie Pod with Tom, John, and Jess. Three people who just love the movies. They've watched each and every Academy Award-winning Best Picture winner in no particular order. This week, they discuss the Best Picture winner of 1982, Gandhi. That is this week on the Best Pick Movie Podcast. Also, check out Last Stop Penn Station with Kerry Silken and Ian Riccoboni, as this week they have part two of their interview with Bushwhacker Luke. That is this week on Last Stop Penn Station. Also, check out The Castle Vault, which is a chronological deep dive of Disney animated films powered by Disney+. This week, they discuss the 2018 movie The Incredibles 2. That is this week on The Castle Vault. Also, check out Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, where they sit down and interview podcast host, author, and Weird Al superfan Lex Friedman as they discuss his career, his fandom, and working with Weird Al on the ridiculously self-indulgent, ill-advised Vanity Tour. That is this week on Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast. Also, check out Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts. It is the podcast where I am joined by Jim Boy Star. I sit down and watch 30 minutes of Kingdom Hearts on YouTube, and we dive into what I watched and talked about everything that happens. This week's episode is Kingdom Hearts is Light. That is this week on Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts. And finally, Sharks Pond, a South Park podcast, is back with a brand new episode as I watch and review each and every South Park episode. This week, I review the Season 12 episode, Canada on Strike. That is this week on Sharks Pond, a South Park podcast. Okay, next week on this podcast, this particular one you're listening to, I will be previewing NXT TakeOver In Your House, go through all the matches, give my picks, and who will win. Plus, I'm going to bring up an interesting topic, an interesting conversation about a term that I kind of am going to be upfront with you guys. I'm getting a little bit tired of. What is it? Well, you'll just have to tune in next week to hear what it is. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. Have a good, safe weekend, and when you're done, come back here next week for another episode of That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. And as always, holy shit.